Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday already. These weeks go by so fast. April 22nd. We're going to do our open line this hour of the program before we find ourselves at the end of April and having had no open line. So it's a chance for you to help us program the hours between 9 and 11. Our phone number, we have a couple lines open, if you can believe it. 800-486-8655 is our number. Call with your suggestions. We do this once a month, and you do give us valuable ideas of programs you'd like to hear, areas you'd like for us to cover that we've neglected, or more programs on issues that we have already covered. Great books. We usually do nonfiction books, so you can go along those lines, but there might be some novels that have historical significance. We welcome your phone calls. 800, there go the phones, 800-486-8655. Just a couple announcements. The comedy show we thought we were going to do today, but it's going to be next Thursday. We have done comedy shows usually once a season for the last few years. So the spring, it's spring, right? Our spring comedy show will be next Thursday at 10 a.m. If you have suggestions for comedians, we can't use all of your suggestions, but we have a Facebook page now, and that's a good place to write your suggestions for comedy. We're going to include new comedians and some standbys like Bob and Ray, and we're just going to laugh for an hour. We figure we need it. After a lot of deep conversations, it's time to just laugh. So that will be next Thursday at 10 o'clock. Bill Nye, the science guy, will be joining us on Tuesday of next week to talk about volcanoes and space and all kinds of issues. He's highly entertaining. I think that's all I have to announce. So here we go for our phone calls. And we start with Frank from Madison this morning. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
The month is going by quickly.
Isn't it? I know.
I look forward to the program with Bill Nye. The two suggestions on what I think is a very important issue is the nature of science reporting, the public perception of science, and how journalists deal with reporting on science issues.
Okay.
And often you have journalists without scientific background or scientists who are poor at communicating,
right,
although their science is good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are superb people like Diane Ackerman.
Okay.
But I have a suggestion that Olivia Judson, who writes the editorial science column for the New York Times,
okay,
is a superb example of a scientist doing journalism that is completely good science and accessible at the same time.
Great.
And the other is for the a long distance call to Australia, John Cook.
Okay.
Who is a solar scientist who writes on climate science for the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very lucid, very aware of the problems of communicating, and although he's not a climate scientist, he gets the science right based upon the scientific literature.
Does he write for a paper, Frank?
Hmm?
Does he write for a newspaper?
Oh, it's a blog.
Oh, it's a blog. Okay.
It's a completely self-sponsored program. He just does it as a personal project.
Okay.
So I think that the climate issue, but it's more, he would be a good guest to ask about the difficulties in communicating. And Olivia Judson is a very successful scientist and journalist.
Wonderful suggestion.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for your call,
Bye. As
always. Lori from Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Wonderful. And I just listen to you guys pretty much all the time. But I have two suggestions. The first one is about our bill, our utility bill, Wisconsin Electric, where we used to be able to opt in or opt out giving money towards poor people, which I'm the working poor myself,
mm-hmm,
which I had no problem doing if I had an option to do that. But now you have no choice. And on my last bill, the amount was like $37 plus some change. I wouldn't mind it if it was going towards working poor like myself, but it doesn't, it's going and being allotted to different things like, what was it that was in the paper last fall? Lawyers, different laws, different lawyers being paid, that they're getting paid through the government already as it is. So why do we, the paying consumer, have to pay for something that's supposed to be paid by the government? And how does the utility get involved in something like that? Secondly, there's a mandate that came down about 3-4 months ago from the Vatican to ask all nuns in the world, all of them, to give their financial statements and to turn them over to the church. And how 90% of the nuns have refused to do so, and the 10% that did agree to it were nuns in South America. Curious about, and the reason they gave for not doing it, of course, that they are not going to be on the string to be paying for the pedophiles that been coming out left and right and still are coming out. Mm-hmm. And I think those would be just two great different stories to try and find some more depth with.
Yeah, they would, Lori. So you paid $37 for the monthly bill?
I do believe it was $37 taken out. I haven't paid my bill yet because I was just outraged. I'm going to pay it, of course. You have to. That's it. They have you by the string, and they know it. You know, it's a monopoly. No one's to challenge them. I think it was $37 plus some change.
Huh.
It was at least that. And it has on there, sits next to it, your, like, towards low-income assistance program of some sort. And you can't opt out anymore. It used to be in a little small box as late as, I think, 8 months, maybe 10 months ago. But that's gone. There is no box. There's nothing. They just take your money and allot it where they want.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, wow.
Okay.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lori.
You're
very
welcome.
Much for the
Bye-bye.
Call. A show on nuns would be interesting as well. Let's go to Bill from Appleton. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Kathleen. I recently read a New York Times bestseller, and the reason I would suggest having the guest or the author on is because of her prologue. And the book is called The Help, H-E-L-P. And it's a historical novel about domestic servants in Jackson, Mississippi. So basically, black help with white families. And in her prologue, she supplies an apology that is essentially too little too late. And I think she would be a very interesting guest to have on to talk about that time. She obviously had some personal experience of her own in Jackson, Mississippi in the late 50s and early 60s.
Okay. And it's a novel, but the introduction leads you to believe that we can talk about this as an issue that was a reality.
I believe so, yes. The prologue has a personal note of her own.
Okay.
That would suggest that.
All right,
and if
Bill.
You haven't read it, I would recommend that you read it. I think you will find it a very good read.
All right, The Help. Great. Thank
help.
You. Thanks for your
Bye.
Call. Matt from Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I read an interesting article in the American Conservative magazine in the current issue. It's entitled The Tolerance Mafia, Who Watches the Hate Watchers? And it's about the Southern Poverty Law Center. Apparently, they've been criticized in the past, even by progressive sources like The Nation magazine and they're a little bit over the top with their scaremongering about hate groups for fundraising purposes. Even so says some organizations that watch charitable and philanthropic institutions are also worried about SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Apparently they have an endowment of $200 million because their fundraising is so good. And as you know, in the news lately, we've heard that hate groups are on the rise, you know, because of our historic president and other things like that. And we wonder, and they wondered in the article, if some fact-checking is needed to discern whether much of this is just fundraising stuff or if there's something really behind it. So good article to check out, and maybe a show could come out of it.
It's in the American what?
American Conservative magazine.
All right. I must say I haven't heard too many disparaging words about that group. They've been around for a long time.
Well, The Nation magazine wrote an article about it, and also this philanthropic this agency that rates philanthropic groups was worried about the amount of money they raise.
Okay. Well, yeah. We'll check it out.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Thanks for the call. Mark is next from Richland Center. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Kathleen. I called the other day and mentioned the goings-on in Bolivia that Evo Morales has called a climate summit, wanting to focus more on the rights of Mother Earth and indigenous people. Maybe you could look at that. He and the president of Ecuador have not been given money that was promised to them by the U.S. because they didn't sign for the Copenhagen Agreement. And then maybe there's a possibility that you could look into the Jesus Manifesto, which is really trying to look at a different kind of approach to Christianity, to live exactly the way Christ wanted people to live, which doesn't, of course, include war and things like that.
Okay, and is that a book or?
It's a website, JesusManifesto.com, I think.
Oh, it's a website. All right. Thank you, Mark.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Milton from Madison, hello.
Hi, I'd also like to second the motion on a show on science reporting. I think that it could be a lot better, and I think we could be treated like we're a lot smarter. But the suggestion I wanted to make related to yesterday's show with Richard Clark. I asked Mr. Clark a question, and Mr. Clark denied and brushed off that Israel mounts aggressive espionage efforts against the United States. And, I just immediately went to a search engine and found things in the New York Times, Counterpunch, some real mainstream, Fox News, all about FBI investigations, CIA investigations, where the Israelis are involved in espionage in the United States, not only political espionage, defense espionage, business espionage at all levels.
All right. Do you have an article?
Ongoing investigations, and I think we need to talk about it rather than having somebody who I guess I used to trust a lot more until yesterday deny that it's happening.
Do you have an article that you would like for us to look at, Milton?
Okay. Go to Counterpunch's website and put in Israel and espionage into their little on-site search engine, or just put Israel espionage America, into a search engine. It's all right there.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call. Pat is next from St. Cloud. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
All right. You?
I'm great. Thank you. I enjoy your program. This is my first time calling.
Thank you.
Last night, I watched a program called Food Inc., on PBS at 10 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
and it brought me out of my chair as far as what was happening with Monsanto and the agriculture industry. It started out with organic farmers, and then it went on to how much control Monsanto has, and it just made me so angry, and I think we need to do something. So that's one thing. The second thing is I've read a couple of books by a woman named Monica Holloway. She is an incredible writer. They're their memoirs. One is called, and it's concerned her childhood through going to college. It's called Driving with the Dead. And that deals with the fact that her best friend was a daughter of the funeral parlor in the town, and she became best friends and intrigued about what was happened as far as these people are concerned. But the second one is even more important as far as I think more people are concerned, and that is, it's called Cowboy and Wills. And Wills is, she has a 3-year-old who is diagnosed with autism, and when he gets a puppy at age 6, it changes his world completely. With Wills, he's able to say, "I love you, cowboy." Wills is able to say that, and it's just absolutely a delightful look at autism. Also takes a look at puppy mills as far as what happens as far as getting a dog from a puppy mill. And it is just a fabulous, fabulous haunting book.
All right, Pat. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you. We're doing an open line for the month of April. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. John Treader answering your phone calls. We have one line open right now, so just take it. And we'll return to more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Knowing full well that he was no fan of anniversaries, and he has a quote about anniversaries, we will talk about Mark Twain. Yesterday was the 100th anniversary of his death, and we're going to be looking at Mark Twain's life and his influence on writing in the United States and how relevant he is today and why he just keeps selling a lot of books. We'll talk with a guest who is a scholar, Mark Twain scholar. One of my favorite quotes is, I use this at home all the time, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. I like that one. So we'll talk about Mark Twain, hour number two. This hour, it's an open line. 800-486-8655 is the number. Lou is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Lou.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, Lou, you?
Okay.
Good.
How about a show on forgotten or abandoned industrial processes?
Okay. Such as?
I can't think of any to be specific, but there's tons of stuff that's been forgotten about from, say, maybe back in the start of the Industrial Revolution, industrial processes, that are just as good or better than stuff being done today, but it's been forgotten or abandoned.
Okay. Did this an article catch your eye, or... Did you read something about it?
No, I read about this a long time ago. I don't have any specific article.
You're just thinking about something
I read a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you can flesh it out at all for us, Lou, do you have a computer you can send us an email on it? Because we'd like to follow through.
Okay.
If you can remember the article or give us more specifics on it, that would be great.
Okay.
Thank you, Lou. Uh-huh. Bye. Anne from Madison. Hi.
Hi. I remember when CBC kept on the hockey players' strike, and they covered it again and again, and that leads me to ask if you would cover the situation in Haiti at least once a month and talk to actual Haitians who are living in Haiti right now and who don't feel constrained by, you know, connections to great big huge financial organizations like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, because I understand that with all the, you know, several billion dollars that have been raised, most of it is not getting to Haitians. And it's sort of off the radar, you know, now, what, several months later, but I understand that most Haitians are, you know, still suffering from exactly the same problems they always have. And since we're in large part, you know, with the rest of the Western countries responsible for the centuries-long exploitation of Haiti, I think it behooves us to, you know, to know what's going on and whether all the relief that's been promised is getting where it's supposed to go.
Okay. All right, Anne, good suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh, bye. Dave from Milwaukee, hi.
Hello?
Hi, Dave.
Hello? Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to talk about was telecommunications industry abuse. One company in particular, Sprint, and also AT&T, what they're doing is, say you'll call up about a deal, and... you know, you might not like the service or the rate of speed of your DSL. And so you call back and, you know, try to get a better speed and make another deal. Well, what they end up doing is they're agreeing, especially AT&T, to give you this new speed at this new price. So you're thinking, okay, everything's all right. So what ends up happening, you get your bill and they've charged you a higher price. And then when you call to complain, they'll ship you to about three different people and end up denying you the price that was promised to you by their customer service people. And then what ends up happening is, you know, like me, I canceled, because that's how I protest abuses in the corporate world. I cancel. With Sprint, I actually paid a fee to cancel, but it was worth it to make that statement. AT&T, when I called, they said there was no cancellation fee. And so what I did with them was I wrote a complaint to a Consumer Protection Agency and also a letter to Raquel Rutledge, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter from the Journal, because she's a very courageous investigative reporter, hoping that she would take on the telecommunication abuses, because they're hurting, especially the poorer people in Wisconsin, which I am one.
I can't figure out any of those bills, Dave. They're just amazing, aren't they? They're just, you know, this and this added and 24 cents and $3.25 and... Oh, my goodness. Well, at least you know you're the kind of consumer that people ought to be.
Well, I'm urging other people to do what I did, because that's the only way we make a statement to these companies that they just can't do anything they want to us.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. I think there's a show in there and beyond the telephone industry, satellite, cable, all of that, but we'll flush that out in some way, too. Thanks, Dave, very much for your call. Ken is next from Madison. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Ken.
You're doing very well. Yeah, my suggestion is, and I hope I haven't missed something on this, because I've been trying to gather all the information I can get, because I was one of the lucky people that one Wednesday night, I think it was the 14th of April, just after 10 p.m., to see this meteor fly by my house.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and it was, understated even to say it was probably the most spectacular thing I've ever seen.
Oh.
And probably ever will again. Very interesting. I've talked to other people and read everything I could about this thing. But I'm just not hearing enough, I think. And I'm wondering if, I know you're having the science fellow coming next week. Perhaps he could talk certainly about meteors and meteorites and what they are. But I'm wondering if there's anyone around that could talk about this thing specifically, perhaps the trajectory of this meteor. It's turned out to be a meteorite now, because they have found these rocks. And just exactly where it went, and then what they've discovered from, I think, a handful at least of rocks that they have and they're studying. And it just seems like such a fun time to me. I'm not a hunter. I'm not a bird watcher, but I think it would be so much fun to go out and look for these meteorites. And people are doing that, I guess, from all over.
Yes, they are. They're coming from all over the country.
Yeah, they sure are. And it just sounds like a lot of fun. You know, take the kids out or something and look for meteorites.
Well, go do it.
Yeah, right. But I'm not quite sure where to go, and I'm sure that's the problem. I mean, you're looking for a small rock and a needle in a haystack, but sight is the most spectacular thing that I've ever seen. I've read some things that sort of go along with what I saw, but maybe just two, like the color and the speed at which it was traveling and stuff like that.
What did you think it was?
Well, at first I thought it was an airplane that was sort of banking into the house. I saw it out my kitchen window. And I thought, you know, you'll see a little dot way in the distance, and then it'll get brighter.
Yes.
And it looks like an airplane that's turning towards you. So it looked like landing lights in the thing. And then it just took over. It just got super bright. It's hard to say, because you're always talking about distance when you talk about size, but maybe a softball size held out at the end of your arm, or maybe not that big, but it seemed maybe a baseball. So it seemed that big and very bright. And then I realized it wasn't coming towards me, but it was going from north to south. My window faces directly west. And then about this time, I'm starting to turn around and say, you know, what is that? And actually sort of crouch down behind my cabinetry in my kitchen, because I thought, that is very strange. And then I realized that it was traveling from north to south, and that it had this long tail that was the most beautiful gold color I've ever seen. And what was striking about this thing was, of course, that tail. I realized, well, that thing is a meteor, of course, or space junk or something falling out of the sky. But it was the rate at which it traveled was so amazing. It wasn't going fast. It just seemed to me, I described it as sort of floating, but it was actually just, you know, somebody else I read said that he thought it was going in slow motion. It was just like right out of your wildest imagination, or something that your imagination became aware of through like H.G. Wells' illustrations in books, or nowadays computers generated graphics where it's showing the thing, you know, coming in to the Earth's atmosphere and burning up. It looked exactly like that. It was the most amazing thing. I'm colorblind, so I can't talk about all the colors, but I read one other report where somebody said the word gold, and that's what it looked to me, a golden tail, and traveling really slowly.
Oh, I wish I had seen it, Ken. What a description.
That's what a lot of people say, and I'm just interested in hearing stories about what other people saw.
Right.
And
I don't know if anybody's done a show on this. We'll have to check and see, because you can always go to the archives. I'm sure Rhonda and Chrissy are listening right now, and they can check and see if somebody's done a program. We haven't, but we'll ask Bill Nye about this, certainly. And I hope you would call when he's on the show next week.
Yeah, I'll definitely be listening. I think right now down at the Geological Society on campus in Madison, they have these rocks. You can go look at them.
Oh.
They have extended hours at night.
Oh.
I'm not sure what they are. But it's down on Dayton Street in Madison.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact address, 12-something.
Have you been?
No, I'm thinking of going down there today, as a matter of fact.
Right, okay. Well, we should call them, too. Well, if nobody's done anything, I think this sounds fascinating. We'll do a program.
Yeah, apparently this thing's been flying around out there for 5 billion years.
Oh, my gosh.
It's its final home.
Ah! Doesn't that just dumbfound you? Woo!
So it was amazing.
Oh, great, Ken. Thanks so much for calling. We'll talk to you next week with Bill's on. Thank you. I don't know if anybody. I would assume maybe somebody's done a show. We love science shows, so we'll check and see. And definitely ask Bill Nye, the science guy, who will be with us next Tuesday. Ken is next from West Allis. Hi, Ken.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Great. Say, I was wondering, have there ever been any studies done on hearing damage for the kids with these real heavy subwoofers in their cars and in their houses? Certainly, I would think that as a older fellow like myself, you know, who suffers from a hearing loss, you would want to try to do anything you could to avert that from happening. I understand kids, you know, when they're younger, seem to feel that they're invincible. But have there ever been any studies done to show that there may be a significant hearing loss as a result of listening to the bass sounds that loud?
Well, I think there have been studies done on that, haven't there? I'm sure there have. I've read some over some time. I don't know how people can stand that. I think I suffer from some hearing loss for having done radio for so long, and I have these headphones on every day, which I'm sure has done something to my hearing as well. But it has to. You can't listen to anything that loudly and have it be good for your ears, can you?
Well, I certainly wouldn't think so. And, you know, if you're listening to their license plates and half the bumper rattling around on their car, you're wondering what it's doing to their eardrum.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the eardrum's got to be responding to that same vibration. I'm surprised that the eardrums just don't shoot out the ears.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've heard a story that the military had thought of using subsonic type of noises like that to disrupt equipment. And it was thought to be useful as a weapon, but I don't know if that ever came about or not. But it certainly would, I think, be worthwhile exploring. I don't know if anything is out there, to be perfectly honest with you, but I really do find that it concerning to me, not because it's so much annoying or anything, it's just what kind of damage are the kids doing to themselves.
Right. And it's also annoying, let's face it. But I'm sure there have been a lot of studies done on noise pollution and hearing problems, so we'll look at that, Ken.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Thank you.
Alan from McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Alan.
Hi, good morning. I had a suggestion for a topic as the current immigration policy in the United States and how it affects the working class.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly wouldn't want a guest that has a racist point of view. I'd want to, you know, amount of it, but it just, as a working class person myself, it's basically impossible to compete because the same employer that will break the law by hiring someone who is an illegal alien also will, you know, ignore overtime laws and everything else, and plus with the health care the way they did it, basically emergency rooms are free clinics, and I, you know, owning a house, have to provide health care for my family, also the hospital will take that, and just all the implications of it. Actually, I was even saying before to your assistant that an open border policy would actually be better than the way it is now, because it just sets them up for exploitation the way it currently is. And I don't know any good authors on it. I just know how it is affecting the working class.
Yes, and it's an issue that we haven't taken up recently, and it's about time. So we'll write that down and follow through, Alan.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yep.
Paul is next from Duluth. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Kathleen. You know, I don't think I'm the only one, I hope I'm not, who's noticed that, particularly on the cable channels like History and Discovery, there's an awful lot of apocalyptic programming that's kind of centered around the Mayan calendar pointing to the year 2012. There's also a program called The World Without People, which is actually kind of interesting because it takes the more, it shows how the planet will reclaim if all the people in the world disappeared for whatever reason and all the buildings were left standing, and how the just natural processes would reclaim it. My theory about the whole thing is that maybe we have some kind of innate need to, maybe it's a artifact left over from the Cold War, but people of my age were all brought up with this doomsday scenario. And I'm curious, I don't know who you could get, but I think it would be very interesting because there's an awful lot of it on television.
Yes,
now.
You're right. People do have a fascination with all of that. I'm not sure why. I tend not to share the same fascination, but we did a show on this. We'll have to look it up on the internet and find out when it was. And it was somebody who looked at the Mayans, particularly.
It seems to be a fairly strange interaction between religion, science, and pseudoscience.
Right, right, exactly.
And I don't know if anybody's looked into it, but I think it could be maybe something that bears revisiting.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Thanks
Bye.
For your call. And let's go to Barney from Madison. Hi, Barney.
Oh, hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Well, I would like to suggest a guest. You had a guest on a few days ago who rather vigorously attacked this person, Wayne Pacelli of the Humane Society of the United States.
Right.
And that's considered a rather moderate organization. And Pacelli is spelled P-A-C-E-L-L-E.
Okay.
And I did look up the Discovery Institute that your previous guest was on, the man who wrote the book called A Pig is a Boy, et cetera, et cetera. And that Discovery Institute is opposed to, it promotes intelligent design over evolution. It's opposed
right.
to Darwinism and doesn't believe in climate change. So I thought Mr. Pacelli would be a good guest. He could come on and defend himself.
All right. It's a good suggestion, Barney. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh. Bye. Let's go to Beth from Jefferson. Hi, Beth.
Hi, good morning. Boy, there have been great suggestions, but here's another one. I suggest that we get David Bloom on the show. He's a permaculturalist and ethanol expert, and he just comes from a solutions point of view. We are all facing some of these world problems that seem heavy, of environmental degradation and perhaps fuel scarcity, and it seems sometimes really overwhelming. And then enters David Bloom, who says, you know, this problem can be solved, and it'll be solved best by the common people, just putting their ingenuity into looking around at the resources we have that are renewable, combining them with a little hard work, but technologies that have been proven and used to be used that were sustainable and even restorative. And we can do this, guys. He has a really inspiring message, and he travels the country giving it and inspiring people to kind of take charge so that they can be actionists, taking action and not necessarily feeling so overwhelmed by the world's problems.
Okay.
He's going to be giving a lecture, a benefit lecture, this Friday at 7 p.m. on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. That's going to benefit the Energy Hub, a student group on campus that's inspiring young people to see what they can learn so that they can take charge of their future. And Town and Country RC&D, a resource conservation and development group. So he's a good man, and he's going to be in the area, and I'd sure love it if we could capitalize on that.
All right. Great suggestion. Thank you, Beth.
He's got a website at www.alcoholcanbeagas.
I'm sorry. Do you want to say that again?
www.alcoholcanbeagas.com. He's a funny, good speaker. So
alcoholcanbeagas.com.
Right.
Okay, Beth. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
More phone calls momentarily. This is our open line for the month of April. Our number is 800-486-8655. If for some reason you can't get through, and open lines are every day of the month, actually, when an idea strikes you, we would prefer that you send us an email. And let me just give you everybody's addresses here. They're fairly easy. Mine is Dunkay, Rhonda's Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, Chrissy's P-E-A-S-E. So you just use those at WPR.org. Did I make myself clear? So it's Dunkay at WPR.org and then Fanning and P's, and send it to all of us. So during the times when we brainstorm, which is just about every day, we can bring up your suggestions. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We talk about Mark Twain, the second hour of our program this Thursday. Two more of your phone calls. Lou from Milwaukee, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, how are you?
This idea of a show would have to do with injection of carbon into soil, depleted soil. Some time ago I read where the ancient people in the Caribbean flourished by using carbon. In other words, they would burn wood or whatever and bury it in the soil to enhance it. But my question is, in Europe, there was a proposal to take carbon out of the atmosphere and inject it under people's houses, and there was a protest about it, about this from the people that would be involved. And I wondered, why didn't they take that carbon and give it to people in areas of the world that have depleted soil to enhance their soil?
Okay.
So I would like to hear a show on that.
Okay. Thank you, Lou. Uh-huh. Bye. We go next to Tracy from Milwaukee. Hello, Tracy.
Hello. I have two items I would love to have, I'd love to hear discussed on your show. One of them is to piggyback on an earlier caller who had mentioned the documentary Food, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic documentary, but there's also another one that is equally fantastic for people to see, and that's called Fresh, F-R-E-S-H, Fresh the Movie. It's basically similar to Food, Inc., except it focuses more on the farming, and it features several different farmers around the country, some of them who are the conventional farmers who work with the, the pesticides and the, are basically held around the neck by the larger food manufacturers. And then it also features some of the farmers who are more independent and do things more naturally and to kind of complete the cycle of from earth to our plates. And one of the featured farmers is Will Allen, the very popular urban farmer who has created Growing Power right in the city, the heart of Milwaukee, and he's featured on there as well. And it's a fantastic movie. It's called Fresh, Inc. And then the other item I wanted to mention was there's a lot of talk and a lot of proliferation of for-profit education these days, and I was just wondering if there's been a show done on that, you know, the pros, the cons, the benefits, people's experiences with them, because I know that it can be controversial. So those are my two items.
Yeah, those were, what happened to those? That's a good question. What happened to those? Remember the Edison schools and the, there were a lot of those. I don't know if they're still around.
There are several, and what makes them particularly controversial, well, you know, the bottom line is that they're for profit, but then there's other things, other aspects to them are such as, you know, the accreditation bodies. I know that regionally accredited colleges, whether they're for profit or not, have a much more solid accreditation, and they're more quote-unquote official, if you will. And that all, you know, that's part of the controversy, and there's people who poo-poo the whole idea, and then there's people who support it because it's, they're creating a an alternative to the state schools, and there's just, they're run a little more efficiently, and people get more one-on-one attention, and it's just a smaller, more family-like atmosphere at for-profit colleges, and so, you know, there's pros and cons, and I'm just wondering if, you know, I think that'd be a really interesting show if you had a couple of people on, you know, on either side,
right,
talking about it.
All right. I agree. Thanks, Tracy.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Annie is next from Baraboo. Hi, Annie.
Good morning, Kathleen. For those of you who haven't yet made it up, over, or down to Devil's Lake State Park yet this spring, you're in for a few little surprises. All the big trees that used to be along Sky High Road up at the top of the hill are cut down. And today, Earth Day, the town of Baraboo is celebrating Earth Day by cutting down the trees going down to the south shore. Down there, there's a winding hill that sweeps down, just beautiful, just a treasure. And the trees are coming down because our townships fear liability if there isn't enough, you know, visibility. This on a road that has a 15-mile-an-hour speed limit. I don't know how much visibility you need. But anyway, I'm just concerned. I know people all over the state have been enraged by the cutting down of their trees, and I would like to know what exactly this liability is. Is it a perceived threat on the part of our local government institutions, or is it really a real thing? Are people really suing the township because they hit a deer? I'm pretty sad.
Yeah, and you say it's happening in other parts of the state?
Oh, yes, where townships cut along the side of the roads, and they cut back. I don't know exactly what there's something like 30 or 33 feet from, I think, the center of the road, or maybe from the edge of the road, that the townships have, the local governments have the right-of-way. So in the case of what's happening right now as we speak, where that the trees are being cut down along that winding hill, that is State Park, Devil's Lake State Park, on both sides of the road. But the Department of Natural Resources can do nothing to stop it because it is within the right-of-way of that town road that happens to go down through there.
I see.
So, and it's just in Sauk County, I mean, road after road has been, the roadsides are just cleared. And right now what's happening is the guys are out there with their equipment and they're trampling. There's yellow lady slippers. There's all, you know, there's, it's nesting season. The warblers are just arriving. And it's just kind of, I don't know, I sometimes wonder about our species and our society.
Yeah, I think you need to plant a tree somewhere today, Annie.
Yeah, really.
You'll feel better.
The thing is, and if it has to be done, if this liability issue is really an issue, or is it just, again, we're scared and so we say, oh, we better not, we might get sued. I mean, we'd go through our lives paranoid about a lot of stuff. But if it's, couldn't there be a better way of doing it? Maybe have youth out there learning how the best way is to trim a tree instead of coming with these kind of, I don't know, shredding. It's sort of like a brush hog, only it's going from a different direction. So I'm not just mad. I think it's an issue, though, that we don't really know. We say, oh, well, we have to do this or we have to do that. But we don't know the reasons really behind it.
All right. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Julie from Rice Lake. Hi, Julie.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
I would like to hear a show regarding these behemoth corporations called pharmacy benefit managers. And a lot of people aren't aware of it, but their growing strength and power in the healthcare market is driving a lot of your small town or local pharmacies out of business. And I don't have a dog in this race. I mean, I'm not a pharmacist or anything like that, but I just like having a local pharmacist that I can go to and talk to. But what these big companies do, they're like middlemen between the health insurers and the pharmacy. And basically, they are gradually squeezing people into using a very limited number of providers, coincidentally, their own pharmacies that are basically big, huge mail-order pharmacies where you have to, wait on the phone or deal with things only by email or a computerized phone. And it's just, not only is it impersonal, but it's potentially dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And because I recently, because of an insurance change, had to go from, actually it wasn't even just a mom and pop pharmacy, it was a regional chain, and I had to switch because they made it, they didn't force me, but they did in the sense that if I stayed with my old pharmacy, the price of my medications was
double. Oh my gosh.
And these guys are playing hardball, and they just want a few big players out there, and people need to know that this is happening and do something about it.
Okay. If you have any more information, could you send it our way? It sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Certainly. And if can you tell me how I might do that, please?
Do you can you send an email?
Yeah, sure.
Good.
I can go to the website and figure that out.
Good,
sure.
Good. Okay. Send an email. Send it to, well, just send it to me, and
yeah.
I'll give it to Chrissy and Rhonda. It's Dunk.
Uh-huh.
At WPR.org.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye. We go to Carol next. Hello, Carol.
Hi. Mine is actually a three-part request. Recently in the news, ex-military officials claim that obesity in schools is affecting recruiting and becoming a serious national security issue.
Mm-hmm.
And related to that is, if you ever go through the USDA guidelines for what should be served in school lunches, it's okay to serve tater tots or french fries, and they're considered a vegetable. It would be nice if you could get an actual dietitian or someone from a medical background to review the USDA guidelines, and also why are they controlled by the Department of Agriculture and not by the Department of Health. And then the third part is, there's a website called School Lunch, Subtract the Additives. And there's a young woman, she's a senior, she'll be graduating, I believe, in June, but she put in a request to Aramark, originally in November, requesting an ingredient list of the foods that are served in her school lunches.
Hmm.
And according to their website, they say that they will give you the list upon request. Well, they've been stonewalling her and giving her the runaround and talking about proprietary issues and conflict of issue, and now they've just completely stopped any contact with her whatsoever.
Where is she from, Carol?
She is actually in Illinois School District.
Huh.
And her website is School Lunch, Subtract the Additives.
School Lunch, Subtract the Additives.
Mm-hmm. And okay. She has an email there. It's healthytara@gmail.com.
Okay.
They're interrelated issues, but the USDA guidelines, the nutritional value and how they were originally created and how they're interpreted today are, I would say they're seriously abused. They're not looking at the actual sodium content or the sucrose content in the lunches. They're just serving like a 3-ounce protein, 2 vegetable or fruit, and
right. Okay. I think getting that young woman on would be a very interesting show, too. So we will look at this. We've done a lot of shows on nutrition and obesity and selling soft drinks in schools and growing gardens and all of that. But our audience loves this particular issue, so we'd be happy to to follow through on that. We have about 30 seconds left. Can I do another call? We'll try. Rachel, hi.
Hi, real quick. I've heard on other shows people mentioning seed savers in Decorah, Iowa. And I don't know if you've ever done a show on them, but I just thought that would be fun.
We did something on seed savers in, what country was it, where they're saving seeds from all around the world? Is this
Decorah, Iowa.
No, this was in some real icy place, underground in a vault somewhere.
Oh.
Yeah, it was fascinating, but of course now I can't remember where it was. But we'll look at Decorah, Iowa.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for the call. Thanks, everybody, for all your calls during this open line. We always do them once a month. If you didn't get through or if you want to send us emails, the last part of it is at WPR.org. Mine is Dunkay. Send it also to Rhonda Fanning, F-A-N-N-I-N-G, and Chrissy's P-E-A-S-E, and they're all at WPR.org. Thanks to John Treader for doing our on-air production, and we have news coming up in just a moment, and we'll return with more Thursday morning conversation and celebrate an anniversary. Mark Twain would have hated it, but we'll have fun.